Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language.
And, you know, of course, when I see them, they're clean cut, you know,
I'm not going to step aside for a fight. They're going to go to a bar and get drunk, and somebody's going to get spill beer or something on them, and that's going to be, boom. Now what are they going to have? They're going to have a criminal record. This is all tied in. Oh, they should have been in the bar drinking. Boys and girls, that's a stupid statement. Everybody drinks or doesn't drink according to what they want to do. The point is, my statement is, this post-traumatic stress, we have to take better care of our young men and women coming back, because what's going to happen to them? They don't have an answer. They don't know why they're sick, and they are sick, believe me. Like these guys that were blown up, their physical injuries are healing, but not the mental stress. It's like, what's that, thousand-yard stare? Is that the film?
Thousand-yard stare.
Thousand-yard stare. That's what they have. But they're being very polite to me. You know, Mr. Kennedy this, Mr. Kennedy that, Mr. Kennedy, I was told to come down here and all that. It takes a lot of my time, which I will gladly give, but I can only help so many people. So I guess we're asking tonight, Phil and I, stay active in your community. Find our sons and daughters that are coming home to your community, whatever town it is. Find out if they need help. Now, you're not doctors, you're not psychiatrists, but maybe you can befriend these people.
Well, you know, Bill, being in combat consumes you. You become completely focused on it now. Thoughts of home and family are pushed completely from your mind as you look in 100 directions at once. As it's an IED or just a pile of trash. Where would a sniper hide? Are those kids just playing, or are they lookouts for an insurgent ambush? Where are my teammates? Is that a tripwire? Does that man in the distance have a shovel or a rifle? Is he digging an IED or fixing a broken pipe? So you're completely immersed in what is happening at the moment. You're consumed by your mission, completely focused on what's happening around you, because you're never more than a split second away from absolute chaos now of a firefight or an IED attack. You're always looking for cover, for something to dive behind when the bullets start flying. You become attuned completely to the environment and as one with your teammates. So it's a, you know, it's that level of intense and singular focus is crucial to survive in combat.
Mm-hmm.
It's also impossible to seemingly turn off when you come home.
You know, there was a t-shirt.
It's also impossible to seamlessly turn off when you come home.
There are always t-shirts that, you know, funny sayings and all that, right? And we have Harley t-shirts and everything. And this guy had a t-shirt that said, stay 100 meters away or you will be shot.
Right.
This is pretty basic. I mean, he's getting the message out, leave me the blankety blank alone. He's a big boy, like I said. I know I said it several times because sometimes you think of a range, you think of tunnel rats, you think of, you know, small. This was a big boy. Both the two gentlemen the past 2 weeks have been in my shop have been some, I wouldn't say they're roided out, but they're muscled out anyway. They're looking for something. And if we can't give them a positive path to go, what's the alternative positive path?
You know.
That's right. That's right.
Well,
last thing we need is to have these people back in prisons.
Exactly.
And for what? They weren't like that. We sent them overseas.
No.
Don't we have responsibility again for our sons and daughters?
You can ask the ladies.
Ask somebody. What do we have on the line first, Phil?
Nora and
who's that? Let's start with what's the bottom one? 508
or
508. 508. Yes. You're alive. Are you with us tonight?
I'm alive. I'm with y'all. Lots going on. my daughter. We know it's a girl from, you know, ultrasounds before, but she's just popping along real slowly. They said that the baby's probably going to stay, I guess, in the hospital for like a week because she's like 5 weeks early and they want to like make sure the baby is maintaining weight and its lungs are okay, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I just talked to her just shortly ago and she wasn't too happy with what was going on. So I said, you should have thought about that before you went and made the baby. But, you know, we're all excited just waiting for that. And, you know, that's about it.
You know, we're talking about all these problems in life, but truly new life, children, that's the hope for everything. That's what keeps us going. And we want our children and our grandchildren to have a better life than we have. So I'm going to make any sacrifices for my family as I'm sure all of our listeners are. So every now and then we say, God, things are bad, but we forget that we have wonderful things like birth. And you had a grandbaby just not that long ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. Who did you have, brother? Girl. I might know that, but I wonder what else done that. Okay. Well, who else we got on the air tonight? I want to talk to some other people. Who else we got up tonight? How about 708-539? You're on the air tonight. We'll say hello to you.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Phil. It's Nora. Hi, Stacy. Congratulations, Grandmother B.
Hey, thank you so much.
You know, I already told you in a text. I'm so excited for you. I can't wait for my grandson to come. Talking about the topic for this evening, it's a wonderful thing, and I'm going to say why. I had a stepdad that came back from the advice I was loonier than enough been, and he wasn't. The post-traumatic stress disorder was so intense. Growing up in the house was like you're in the war zone with him. He always slept with a loaded gun.
Well, you know, life outside the wire in a combat unit is the pinnacle of stress and rest, boredom, with every minute lasting an hour and every hour lasting an eternity.
You could be quite the poet.
I know.
Well, I understand that, but I've also dealt with it firsthand. You know,
it's
pissed me off. What?
Somebody was shooting bullets at you?
No. He had a gun in his hand, you know, while he was sleeping. When he
don't let him sidetrack. Continue on, please.
No, he's not. But,
good.
You know, when he woke up, he thought he was back in the bush, you know. And so we were all goops. And I'll never forget it. You know, I'd have to hide in the closet or whatever. I thought, oh God, here it comes. You know, it's not pleasant. You know, it traumatizes the house. But at that time, and I don't think the times have changed. Probably is in a lot in the decades. Okay, from Vietnam, from World War One, whatever the case may be. I don't think anything has helped in regards to treat the post-traumatic distress order. You know, they train everybody to go over there to kill, but they don't train them to come back. And it's not a question of training them to come back. It's a question of adapting back from a war zone. You know, today's day and age is a complete different war than anything else. It's similar in regards to you don't know who the enemy is. They all look alike. Not being racist or anything like that. But they put children in harm and everything else. They don't care who they use to get to their target. Okay. But I agree with Bill. You know, something has to be done because there's too many men and women coming back and they're so messed up and so screwed up and nobody understands it. They don't want to deal with it. They want to just shove pills or whatever the case may be and push them in their way. It doesn't work like that.
You know, there's more vets in the last 10 years living on the street than there is anywhere else in the world.
And right now there are more vets committing suicide every single week than ever.
I already know.
I actually saved
one some months back. Well, not that long ago, but still thought I was goofball. Because I can't save the world. But I saved one. And I wanted to commit suicide. And it was a good day for that moment. You know? And what do you do? These guys are hurting. Even the women, they're hurting, they're in pain. Nobody can understand the depths of what they see, what they dealt with, day in and day out. You know, like,
and let's look at the big picture for a second here. We have married men going overseas with children, coming back, and their head's in a different place. The wife can't deal with this. The wife's got to raise the children. So the families are breaking up. And now we've got single mothers trying to raise children, and what do they say, but why isn't daddy here? how can children understand, well, my daddy's all messed up because of the war? No. But this is affecting us. We have children, single women, children. Where are the husbands? They can't raise families. They barely can take care of themselves.
Exactly. And I was going to say, how can they handle a situation? How can the wives, girlfriends, whatever the case may be, or just the families, how can they handle a situation when they don't know how to deal with it?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they send pamphlets home ahead of time and, hey, this is what we want you to read up on or go in and, you know, counseling for or whatever. Be prepared for what's coming. Because,
let's not forget the families, too, that live on base and are used to having, you know, discounts on different things, you know, because they are actively living on base, and all of a sudden that folds up shop. You know, they have to come back out here into what they call the real world and maybe have to pay more rent or not live in quite such a good area, you know, different things like that. And to acclimate from everybody kind of respecting everybody to, you know, when you're out here, it's every man for himself. That's a tough adjustment, too.
Well, you know, and the sad thing is, you know, these men and women are hurting really bad, and they don't know how to express it because they've had to endure so much, see so much, had to you know, I couldn't imagine waking up every day and hearing bombing or gunshots or everything, what they go through. I couldn't imagine it.
And through downtown Chicago, you'll hear that shit every day.
Well, I understand that, but I'm not in an actual war zone. You know, you're
it
in
is a
different
war
country.
Zone.
Well, yeah. But it's different in the regard of, you know.
How's it different? My
brother's
a fireman. They have to wait for the cops to show up before they can go in. But then when they go in, they're happy to see them. They're more happy to see them than they are the cops because they know somebody's going to help them.
Right. Well, you know, like I said, you know, the point being is that they don't know how to, as Stacy said, the best word, to acclimate that. And, you know, I'll never forget when my mother went to go divorce my stepdad. He came in fully packed, fully ready to shoot out the damn courtroom. And, you know, they had to wait for the MPs from the Great Lakes, you know, station or whatever base, you know, to get there. And, you know, he was calm. He was calm. He just sat there with his shotgun loaded, laying in his lap, in hand. You know, but the point being, what does it take to wake people up? You know, I remember these nightmares. You know, being a kid and, you know, oh my God, why do we have to hide? You know, why does he have a gun? You know, and most kids didn't go through that back then. You know what I mean? Now it's almost like an everyday occurrence. You know, almost every home has a gun of some sort, you know, whatever the case may be. But it's not used in regards to violence. You know, the point being, they need help. And why are they homeless? You know, they struggle. Nobody
wants
to hire them.
I want to talk about if I have for a second. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
That's
we
okay.
came back, a friend of mine came back in 1971, and we didn't know what he had. Nobody knew what he had. We now know Agent Orange. We didn't know what it was. But the VA hospital would use experimental drugs on him and everybody else. I would see him on a Friday, and the first thing out of his mouth was, "Hey, Bill, how you doing, Bill? Everything's good, blah, 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 blah." The very next week, on a Friday, he's coming home from the VA hospital, and I say, "Bill," he go, hey, Bill, hey, man, how you doing? So this man here is living the emotions to the extreme. Now, can he sustain a marriage? No. How can he be married to a person that is so down one day, 1 week later he's so up? How can he maintain a job? Now, this friend of mine was a smart guy, but who the hell can keep the guy hired? He'd go in one day, you couldn't speak to him because he was not catatonic, but he was almost close to it. He went through a couple of marriages because when he was up, he was a real happy guy. When he was down, he was so down. Now, what this experimental drugs that they were giving him at the time, how did it affect his body? I'm going to share this with you. His immune system became so weak that a simple cold turned into pneumonia, and they couldn't even do anything to stop it because his body had so much drugs in it already. Young man succumbed to cold and pneumonia in America? Come on, we should be able to solve this. But his immune system, because all the experimental drugs they were giving this poor guy in 1971, he couldn't come through. He didn't last to see 72. Hang on a second. I get out in January 71. Yeah, I came home in January 71. He came home right after me. He didn't see 72. Before that, he and I used to ride up and down California. I came all sporty, had a sporty. Two young kids were out to see the world. One tour overseas, and his whole life was done. He can't maintain. He couldn't maintain a marriage. Couldn't do a job. And people don't understand. I see his kids, and his kids still, to this day, of course, they're all grown up now. They're just now understanding why their daddy was so different when he came home. Because we're just now starting to understand Agent Orange. So, again, I'm asking everybody to look for those vets in your neighborhood. I can't reach everybody. I mean, we're only human. We got to take care of ourselves and our family first. But, Jesus, guys, these men and women need our help. Philip and I are trying to do what we can, and I know many of you are doing it also, but right now I get frustrated, because the drugs, I can't compete against the drugs. I can't even have intelligent conversation, dialogue, communication between two people. I can't do it, because sometimes it's only me, and his mind is gone. So anyway, sorry to get on my soapbox again. I asked you people to be more responsible and shut me off when I get on my soapbox. Somebody's got to take responsibility on that. All right?
I will. You're done. Now let's hear a little bit of Dr. Love and then we can get on with the show because I know this is Stacey's best part. Please. Thank you.
All right. We have some interesting people coming in tonight. I'll ask.
Yeah, but, go ahead.
No, you want to say something else about the...
Go ahead.
How did you feel about your friends that came back, that even though they were still your friends, they weren't the same people?
No.
How the hell can you communicate with them? Their likes and dislikes were so changed.
They disappeared.
They almost
went down the road. Mm-hmm. Lost track. Every once in a while, I get a phone call from out of nowhere.
I got another quick friend. I don't know why. This is coming down memory alley. He gets so screwed up on the drugs, not from the hospital, but from the street drugs. I heard he was up in the desert, and I went and found him. He traded his panhead in for a Honda Goldwing and drugs. And I'm looking and thinking, I can't understand that. I'm not bad-mouthing Honda. I'm just saying, you got a panhead. I can't see it. By the way, what happened to him? Let me tell you the same thing. They found him in a Dipsy dumpster. He was dead. Pneumonia, his immune system became so weak from the drugs he couldn't take and all that. But first his mind went, and then because we're bringing young men back and young women, they're strong. But after a while, the body breaks down. So, alrighty, again, I'm drifting away.
And
somebody bring me back.
You better give us Dr. Love.
Okay, we need some Dr. Love. We're going to love you after you give us some Dr. Love. How's that?
Maybe I can do it later on today. I'm telling you, I got my ass the past couple of weeks with these young vets coming in here. It tears me up.
You know, while we're waiting for T-Rock to call in,
hey.
I wanted to. We'll get to that later. But, what?
I've got something very important to say.
Go for it.
Okay.
I officially have been 96 hours smoke free.
Yay!
Yay.
One day
I'll
do that.
Carry on. Okay. Cigarettes or chocolate?
Cigarettes, dude.
Puff, cash.
Yeah. No. Gave up the Marlboro Lights. I don't know.
Okay. But
I'm smoke free. I'm going to tell you right now, I say congratulations to you because it was not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Coming home from the military, I certainly was... excessive everything in there, and I sat down and said, I am more powerful than these artificial things out there. So I don't want you guys to think I'm a goody two-shoes or anything, but Philip understands this. No to drugs, no to alcohol, no to cigarettes, no to coffee, and I'm still trying to work on that no swearing stuff. I go to any bar in San Diego. As soon as I walk in the door, they got free drinks for me right away because the volume goes down and the real drunks say, hey, hey, Bill's here. Try to act sober. So the barmaids love me in San Diego. But it was a decision I made not because of a religious thing or moral thing. I just decided I'm stronger than that.
Right.
At that time, I was involved in situations where my mind had to be clear 24 hours a day. So that first of all, the drugs had to go.
Well, you know, Bill,
and the alcohol had to go because I had to make decisions involving a lot of people. And I couldn't have that stuff in my body. That's only my thoughts. So congratulations.
Thank you. Congratulations. I'm so proud of you. Can I send you some cookies?
Hey, sure. Why not?
Yeah, it'll go good with that chocolate.
Give us some marijuana brownie. She'll feel better.
I don't do those.
You guys are so bad. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, you guys, like, puff pass. I'm, like, the only pretty good here.
You guys like puff pass. What in the hell?
Well, you know, I got this the other day, and, you know, there's no cell phone, or there's no privacy for us cell phone users. And the U.S., the United States, argues that the government need not obtain probable cause search warrants for cell phone user data. Because
right.
Customers have no reasonable expectation of privacy, a Justice Department lawyer argued Tuesday for the Fifth Circuit Court. A senior counselor for the Justice Department Computer Crime and Intellectual Property Section argued that because cell phone companies store usage information at their own discretion. They act as witnesses in a criminal investigation where any relevant information is admissible without a search warrant.
That's why careful what you say.
Uh-huh.
On the telephone. Be careful what you say for the people that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Sound like we're all paranoid. I'm just telling everybody just be...
Absolutely, because Tuesday's hearing stems from a government bid for judicial orders that authorizing the disclosure of 60 days of location data to cell phone companies as part of a routine investigation. Judge Stevens rejected the government's request in 2010, saying they needed to apply for search warrants supported by a probable cause, and a federal judge agreed. The Justice Department is now appealing that decision to the Federal Appeals Court in New Orleans. One of three judges on the Fifth Circuit panel suggested that maybe Smith required a search warrant because cell phone technology is forever advancing and future cell phone records might reveal much more than they do today. The Federal Appeals Court need not address possible future technology. In fact, they should reasonably expect to be tracked by them. Without a warrant, agents are engaging in massive surveillance of people. The United States claims a warrant is not required for this information. We're getting fucked, Bill. Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco said technology is advanced enough that cell phone records can reveal not just where people have been, but also the patterns where they go on a regular basis, the bakery, a mosque, a gay bar, for example. Now, I don't know where to pick those three words from, but...
Bakery, I know that one.
Yeah. The cell phone towers.
Bar, does it say Topless Bar?
No.
Oh, okay.
Cell phone towers are continuously being built to advance cell phone technology, and that the location of specific towers reveals increasingly more locations of the cell phone user. And they took 250 cell phone towers within a 2-mile radius of the courthouse where the hearing was held. Cell phone records can easily indicate that not just the customer's general location, but just specific interface.
I hate that word.
Yeah.
I hate saying that.
Or possibly even to what portion of a building a cell phone or a user has been.
When I take over as President of the United States, that word specific will be taken out of the language. I can't say it. I spit it out. I look at the word, I can say it clearly, but in my making a speech, I get right to that word in my mind, I have to change that word. That's a weak. Does anybody else have a weird word but me? Specific. I hate it. I also hate cell phones. Hate them. I don't need to take cell phones out of my vocabulary. However, yeah. We don't need this. Ladies and gentlemen, remember our grandparents and our great-grandparents?
Oh, remember?
They're Americans.
Years ago, we had a cell phone. We were carrying a brick. She says she's going to call.
Did you tell Bill about the package that's going to come to your house?
No, I didn't, and that's not the place for this.
It's a surprise. No, I wasn't going to say anything more. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You two got secrets again, I understand.
Yes, we do. And you know what? You'll find out.
My friend Marion's on the phone here. Marion and I have known each other.
She up? No, she's not here yet.
Okay.
Well, while we're waiting, is there any kind of links or websites that you both may know that have anything in regards to helping vets coming back? Do they have anything like that yet?
Hey, what, I'll tell you, the best thing you can do is call your local VA.
They're going to give you organizations which have been investigated. We know they're clear.
Correct.
Okay.
Philip and I are so reluctant to give advice out anymore because we're finding out people got their fingers in the pie and it's just frosting our, you know.
Well, then how do you know? I mean, there's only like two VA hospitals in my state, okay? How do you know which ones are actually legit?
How do you know if you don't call and ask them?
Well, the VA hospital, if you call them,
you call them,
they will give you a list.
They will give you people that they've investigated,
yeah,
that are on their,
okay,
list, that are approved to be talked to.
Okay.
The only thing you should be leery of is they start asking you for money right off the bat.
Yeah.
That's the first clue that they're not legit.
Just hang up.
Okay.
And we got on the phone.
Marion's on the phone.
Hello, Marion.
Hey, Phil, I can't believe I missed you in Vegas.
Well, you missed everybody.
I saw Bill, so I guess I didn't miss the important people, did I?
Oh, here we go.
That's
probably one of the rare times we weren't together.
Were you at the Cashman Center this year?
Remember we saw you. I came up to you and gave you a big old hug. We hung out for a little bit. I asked you how your wife was.
We were saying that the only time Phil and I were not together was the Cashman Center. There was so many events going on that truly once we got there, Phil and I just said, we can't make them all. Let's split the stuff down the middle again with that. So I met a lot of our friends, and Phil being in a different physical location, he met a lot of friends up to him. May I tell everybody a little story, please?
Sure.
I didn't ask you. I asked to have my friends. So there you are. We just got to Vegas, okay?
Notice nobody else answered that question except for Phil.
I just got to Vegas, and my wife, who just got out of the wheelchair on Tuesday, doctor, to go to ride the bike. We rode out to Vegas. She wanted to get some water because she's a real water person. And I'm going to go in this little store and get some convenience store and get some water. I know my wife, she's going to look around shopping, so I don't care. I'm standing outside. You know where the store's going?
Go ahead.
Good, okay. While I'm sitting there, minding my own business,
sure.
One of the North County guys comes, hey, Bill, how you doing, blah, 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 good to see you, yeah, you know. Well, he says goodbye. About 5 minutes later, another guy comes up, Mr. Kennedy, oh, my God, I'm so happy to see you, and safe ride up and all that. And I went, yeah, man, things are good. I'm just waiting for the wife. I tell everybody the same story. And so he leaves, and I'm still waiting for my wife to come out of the convenience store. She's only getting bottled water.
That's
all right. That's all right. Then this girl comes up to me, and she wants to know if I want a date. So
yeah.
I look left. I look to the right. I look behind me. I look in front of me. And I figure that sneaky, sneaky Phil set this girl hooked up somehow to pretend she wants to go on a date with me. And then there's no Phil.
What a friend.
Huh? And then I realized this is a professional. She don't know who I am. She don't even care. She just wanted to go to bed with me. So I explained to her that I thanked her very much because it certainly was a nice thing anybody said to me that day so far. But my wife was inside getting water and all that. So she talked to me for seconds and she left. But I swear to you, when the girl came up and wanted to know, do I want a date, I thought that's Phil. Behind a pillar, behind a car, I don't know what he's doing. He set the whole thing up, but no, he was innocent. But I don't know, I guess it's your track record. That's why I blame you. Yeah,
okay.
So that was the very start of it. We had Vegas, I know everybody had a great time, except for when we all had to come home.
Yes, I agree. What was your ride like home?
108 degrees.
Yeah.
And I left on Sunday morning, and I got jacked up with those two or three accidents, and it took me a long time splitting traffic to get through it.
Uh-huh.
And then I got by the agricultural inspection station. That
uh-huh.
was backed up 2 miles.
Ugh.
So just put, you know, up the middle off, I went flying. I finally got to the front, so I figured I better sneak back in line because I know the cops don't like me doing that. Cop looked at me and he waved me on. So I said, well, I'll just keep splitting traffic all the way. I got to the front, he said, don't even slow down. Keep going, boy, keep going.
Uh-huh.
So I appreciated that, but the heat.
Oh, it was miserable.
What day did you come back on?
We came back on Sunday afternoon. We had a friend that couldn't meet us until noon. We went to the Main Street for their Sunday champagne brunch. And we didn't leave until 2:30. We got on the road, got gas, got on the road, and then our fuel line broke. So we, like, literally just kind of coasted off this ramp that was kind of, like, in the middle of bum, you know, where.
Yeah.
And fortunately, Mike has all his tools. He's prepared because, you know, we're riding a 1998 FLHP, and, you know, he's been doing a lot of work on it. So fortunately, we got it going again, and just a little bit more, and it petered out. It had to pull over on the side, and I'm telling you, on that highway, in that heat, and I'm like, I was not in a good mood. It took us 8 hours to get from Vegas to San Diego.
It took me 4.5 hours. To get to Mission and 15 and 76, which I pulled in to get gas, and who was sitting in the shade?
Phil and I split 330 miles later, he and I pulled to the exact same gas station.
Oh, my God.
He pulls up, he's looking right at me, he's, oh, my God, that's Bill. We drove separate and all that, and we hit the exact same gas station. But that heat was coming down off the blacktop and coming back up, and they said 108 degrees. It was draining me. I'm not a big Gatorade person. But I'm going to tell you, I drank 3 bottles. Every gas stop, I knocked a bottle down. And my wife was smart enough.
Need to or not?
Yeah, and I don't even care for Gatorade. My wife was smart enough to give me a salt pill.
Yeah.
And that helped me a little bit too. But,
you have to be careful. It's easy to get dehydrated. I actually noticed something while I was in Vegas that I was kind of curious about. I noticed that the riders of, you know, mopeds, Vespas, scooters and such don't have to wear helmets.
Well, they got a law coming into effect there, and pretty soon they're going to have to do that, and they're also going to have to be licensed because Nevada is broke, if you can believe that, Bill.
Right.
They're looking for money from everywhere.
They have
to
wear.
If you've got a small CC and all that, a certain CC size, you don't need a license or nothing. You just jump on the bike and go. So you got your helmet on right next to you. You got a moped thing going down the road. You got no helmet, no nothing.
Right.
It's legal. It will change soon, though, unfortunately. I like the idea of them running around half crazy. It's a great idea.
Yeah. What? So, Miriam, your ride for cancer on the 21st? Am I correct? Okay.
You are right. Ride for Kids. San Diego Ride for Kids benefiting the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation. You guys know my son, David, who is a brain tumor survivor, still monitored for a giant cell astrocytoma, but he's now 22. He started battling with it when he was 6. So he's doing good, but we're still fighting the good fight. Trying to find a cure and putting money away every city around the country. We got 41 cities around the country that do Ride for Kids. And I'm recruiting my escorts, male and female escorts. And what I mean by that is we look for people with sidecars especially, but we look for people to take a family member or a kid or a sibling of the survivor's family. I asked Bill, actually, if he was interested in, you know, what his answer was, of course.
Well, what is the answer, just so everybody knows?
It's, I don't know my schedule. You have to call me. I have no idea where I'm going to be on October 21st. You have to call me. I don't keep my schedule.
Man, that's Bill's got a full plate for the last long time.
He's got to look at everything. So he's not giving you a run around.
I know that. But
we've been at the campus out there almost every year. Is Edel still working with you guys out there on that run?
She's still working with us, but she's kind of lessened her load. She's not on the task force anymore. We've got a bunch of new people on the task force this year, which is great. I got some San Diego Hog members now. I got some Spider Rider members. I got, you know, a couple people that ride, a couple people that don't ride. I mean, just everybody's carrying the load. So
American Legion riders this year?
I just put in the chat room. I just put in there for the firstgiving.com. It's a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
So the link is in there for you.
Thank you.
We're going to let the American Legion riders know about this, too, because these guys, of course, you know.
They're coming.
Good.
Yeah, they're at the Oceanside chapter. They came last year. They're coming again this year. I love those guys. They're awesome. Great. I don't know if you know. Brian, he used to be the president, Brian Nielsen. He's not the president any longer, but he took one of the moms last year. He was an escort, and she just loved his bike and said it was probably one of the most comfortable seats ever.
Now I remember exactly where I was when we met. Weren't you at Hogs and Heifers dancing up on the bar? Counter dancing. I remember
right,
that
I was. And I did manage to keep my hop on for a change.
Your story.
Yeah, it's your story. I thought I saw somebody sticking pasties, but
oh,
there we go.
No, that was the blonde. I'm the brunette.
There was a brunette when I was there.
And people don't understand that in Nevada, Las Vegas, you can go topless if you have pasties. That's not against the law at all. So quite a few of the girls had pasties on.
Yeah.
I looked, no.
Some of them should not be jumping rope either.
Oh, gosh. You see the girl on Fremont labeled the largest chest in the world? Did you see that one, that girl there?
Wasn't that the blonde with the pasties?
No, she was one dressed like a pirate, a wench or something like that.
Oh, no, I didn't. I missed her.
Each one of her...
Well, you were probably the only one on Fremont Street that missed her. Then.
Oh, God, no, that girl was... But, hey, who am I to judge other people? I was breastfed. I'm all for that, too.
Fremont Street is so funny. You know how, like, you can go and get all these fruity, frozen, alcoholic mixed drinks that are in those big growlers?
Right.
Well, we were out there Saturday night, and a friend of mine comes up, and he's, like, got this chocolate milk-looking thing, and he's like, take a sip. Now, mind you, I really don't drink very much, and I only like the fruity. I can't taste the alcohol, but I get drunk type of drinks. And I took one sip of that, and it was like pure vodka. I was like, what are you doing? Have a little alcohol with your chocolate there. It's supposed to be a mudslide. Everybody's walking around with those things. It was just fun. And we met the guy who won. Did you guys see when the guy who won the Harley?
No,
I was on the other end.
Okay, we met this guy. He was actually from New Mexico who won the Golden Nuggets. It was three different Harleys that they could pick from, and he picked the brand new Road Glide. And then when we were coming back from Vendor Village on Sunday, he was on the shuttle bus with us, and it turned out that Kismet is so funny because his bike in New Mexico broke down like 3 days before, so he ended up driving with his wife to Vegas. And so now he was riding back from Vegas on his brand new bike that he just won. But I was like, okay, how many things do you have to sign off on and how much money do you have to have deducted before you can really take that bike home?
Well, first of all, let me just point out to you that
you could win the bike for $30,000.
Yes. And if you live in California, you can't take the bike home.
No.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And not bring an out-of-state motorcycle in the state of California with less than 7,500 miles. And I got a friend of mine did win one a couple of years ago, and he got stuck in a bottleneck like you wouldn't believe.
Out of
state where he had some family, he had a driver's license, registered in that state, and bring the bike back to California and re-register again in California. But I tell everybody in California, please, if you're going to win something like that, just say, what's the cash buyout? Right. Much smarter, guys.
Wow.
And we can't bring it in California. I live in California. Too bad. So sad.
So you have to get somebody to ride it around Nevada until they get 7,000 miles on before you can bring it home, or you just take the money?
Yes, you take the money, or you can actually register. Just say you've got a family member in Nevada, just to pick a state out there. You can register in the state of Nevada in your name under your family's address, okay? And take it into California, and when you get stopped, say, oh, here's my Nevada address, here's my California address. I go from state to state, and they'll put up with that. They both know it's bullshit, but you get away with that. However, if you try to just take it from Nevada right into California DMV, and you say, I got this motorcycle, I won this motorcycle, I want to register it, they go, no. And they listed. From that point on, that bike can never be registered. The VIN number, the motor number, can never be registered in the state of California.
And they don't tell you until after they get all your paperwork.
You know, it's a different state. You know, Nevada doesn't know California laws.
No, what I'm saying is when you go to the DMV,
they scroll you out.
Turn in all the paperwork.
Yeah.
That's why it's better to ask a question, get an answer before you show them anything.
Or just hang out with some gray-haired old guy. I'll help you out, little girl.
Well, I'm mean, it's a lot less to register your bike in Vegas than it is to pay for registration in that here in California. It's astronomical here in California.
That's correct.
And I just want to say this real quick, Fire Riders. As soon as we wrap up with Miriam, I'll bring you on and you can talk about your event. And Miriam, if you want to stay in on this, it's going to be Bikers Ride for Cancer
on
14th. So I'll let them talk about it and when we bring them on. If you want to hang out for this,
do we have any pictures of her dancing at the Hogs and Heifers that we post? No.
No.
Get any?
Bill, you are just such the character sometimes, I'll tell you.
I try to make myself have a good time.
So, one of the things that I noticed when I saw you in Vegas,
that
I don't think I was quite... Is your beard, like, exceptionally long, or is that usually as long as it is?
No, I have... My goodness, I've had let it grow about 2-3 inches longer than normal. What happened was, my rule of thumb was, only Bill Kennedy's rule of thumb, I need to grab my beard with my hand, close my fist, okay? Anything that hangs out beyond my little finger, I cut that off. And the reason being is, when I'm riding down the road in my old helmet, if it's anything longer than that, the wind blows it up and it whips me right below the eyes, irritates the hell out of me. Subsequently, I have gone to a full-face helmet. Therefore, I don't care, because it doesn't affect me and all that. So you are correct. You're one of the few people who notice that I've got at least 2-3 inches, maybe a little longer, in my beard growing down now.
Wow.
Very good, little girl. Very good.
Yes, I am rather observant when I'm not dancing on bar tops.
Well, I do.
It's your story. You tell me anyway. It sounds good.
Did you get down the Hogs and Heifers at all?
I did. It was so crazy loud in there, and it wasn't, I mean, it was okay. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Oh, I heard a beep. I had so much fun just being on Fremont in general. Did you guys see that Heart Attack Cafe?
No, I wasn't there.
Oh, my God.
I heard about it.
I saw it, yes. What were some of the weird things they had there?
One of the things is when you go in there, if you weigh over 300 pounds, 300 pounds or more, you get to eat for free. And when you go in...
Calories or something crazy or something, was it?
Yeah, well, you have to wear a hospital gown.
Huh?
And then they have Jello shots that are really, really good Jello shots, but they come in like a syringe. And it was just kind of gross, but funny at the same time.
When I was on Fremont, I was trying to go. I had like a plan. Philip has a plan. However, we sometimes deviate. And that's one of my, I was trying, I got so close to going in there, but somebody called me over, da-da-da-da, build a bike show, a topless contest, a bikini contest, and I just didn't make it there. But that would be interesting. May I ask, where did you stay that weekend?
We stayed at the California.
California. I stayed at the club called the D.
Fitzgerald.
I stayed at the Fitzgerald for many, many, many years. I like to favor Irish things. But it's now called the D.
Uh-huh.
And it's all brand new, but I just didn't feel the ambiance. I wasn't that happy with it. So next year, anybody that looks for me, because usually you do find me in the Fitzgerald, now called the D, I won't be there. I don't know where I'm going to be, but I didn't feel it, boys and girls. However, my wife won more money than she lost, so I can't complain about that.
There you go.
How was your hotel? Was it acceptable?
It was
nice. Everything good to go?
But there's just like little things that we notice. Like, for example, there's no little coffee maker in our room.
Thank you, my wife. The Fitzgerald always had a coffee maker. And the Fitzgerald, if you didn't, they always had room service, so I'd get my wife a cup of coffee.
They
don't have one anymore.
Yeah, they wanted $12 for a bar.
They wanted $2.50. We went down to the bar, and they wanted $2.50 for one of those little styrofoam cups with coffee.
Yeah, $10.
$7 for a bottle of water, Bill.
Where
yeah,
that's
you
what my wife
from?
Went out to get the
fine bottle of water.
Where,
I was at the Golden
you...
Nugget.
Oh, okay.
Did you ride
so
your
you
bike many times on the weekend, or did you take advantage of the shuttle to the Cashman Center?
We went up to Mount Charleston. Have you ever been up there?
No. Friends of mine said that they like to leave Vegas, people who live in Vegas, and they go up to Mount Charleston. They said to get away from all of us California people.
It
they don't want to be in Vegas when we're all there. So they were telling me about that, and I hadn't heard about that before.
It was beautiful. It's like you don't even realize that you're that close to, it's, you know, it's like a 90-mile ride round trip, but you go up there and it's cool and they have a lodge and a resort and, you know, big trees and beautiful rock. I mean, usually what we do is, well, one year we did Red Rock, one year we did Valley of Fire, so this year we wanted to do Mount Charleston.
Did you go to the dam this year at all?
No, I would like to do that, though, one time, too.
Did we skip the dam this year because we were at the dam last year? It always is just overwhelming.
Yeah.
And me being the social butterfly, I attended all the clubhouses I was supposed to go to.
And we do want to give a special thanks to the new friends of ours.
The Iron Crossman.
Iron Crossman, who were nice enough to invite us to their house, which is a fucking warehouse. I'm not talking about a little motorcycle clubhouse, a warehouse.
Nice.
Oh, my God. It was big. It was huge.
Comfortable chairs.
Bar.
Laid out. It looks like walking into a...
Yeah, let me back it up. You walk in there first of all, and there's a big bar, right?
Right.
And then you go into the second room, and it's a theater room.
There's a big bar. Oh, there's a big bar. There's full-screen TVs.
That's the second room.
Tables and chairs. No, that's the first room. You go through the doorway, and then there's the big screen TV.
The bigger one, yeah. And outside, they get...
Oh, my God.
It was simply amazing. I never seen a club this well-organized and all that. Now, let me tell you about my karma. We left, and my wife and I... we met a couple of friends of ours in this motorcycle club. They rode their cars and trucks over to Vegas. And I'm not going to say who they are in the air, but I swear to God I'm tempted to say it. But I'm not going to say it, but I really want to say it.
But we also had some problems with... The no colors policy. It seems that Flatfoot's, that's the name of the club,
mm-hmm.
which is cops, were allowed to walk around with their shit on. Nobody bothered them.
I saw a lot of Mongols walking up and down.
I was just gonna say that.
I saw a lot of the clubs. In fact, there was a couple casinos that you could spend the night. I mean, you could book a room and wear your colors in there.
Right.
So I saw that was going on.
One friend of ours in particular went to the Flamingo and was escorted out.
Yeah,
they were a fireman club.
You know, you and I left
no way.
Saturday night or so whatever. You went over to Hogs and Heifers.
Right.
And about midnight or something like that, the wife and I, we left the Iron Crossman Motorcycle Clubhouse. And it was such a beautiful night. It was starting to cool off. I figured, let's go back into downtown Vegas, but let's go east of Vegas. I don't know, 50, 100 miles. I don't know how far it's going to go. My wife and I got 2-3 miles outside of Vegas. It started raining on me.
Mm-hmm.
So we pulled off the first intersection. My wife says, what are you doing? I said, well, obviously God doesn't want me to go any further in this direction. So with the Huey, as soon as I went back to Vegas, stopped raining. So crazy story, but what the heck. I couldn't believe it. All that stinking heat. It's raining on me. This is good.
That would have felt good. I would have liked that.
Last year, it poured on us outside Hogs and Heifers. We were like a half a block away from it, and it poured about 15 minutes, and the streets were, it was fantastic. Everybody's out there getting soaked and having a good time, and we dried up almost immediately with them.
They even had a couple winners of the wet t-shirt contest that night, didn't we?
Yeah, I want to say at the Cashman Center, there was a wonderful collection of young women who decided to display their assets, and I want to thank them for that. There was a couple of nice clubs that had a lot of women competing. But for the women now, we had the strongest biker contest. You had guys taking...
Yeah, I saw that.
Some big boys there, huh?
Yeah. Yes, definitely very impressive. I was impressed with that.
I was going to enter it, but, they didn't have any bicycle tires for me to throw. The other guys would throw throwing semi-truck tires, and at 63 years of age, I thought I should be able to throw a bicycle tire. And they said, no, you got to throw a truck, and I didn't want to show off, you know.
God bless you. They could have made accommodations for you. Come on, what's up with that?
Well, at the Cashman Center, they had the ring. You didn't make the Cashman Center film.
No.
They had a ring where they had boxing and Muay Thai fighting. Down there. And they said, God, Bill, would love to have you come in and do a few rounds. And I said, well, you know, that sounds pretty good. Again, I am 63 years old. Give me a 63-year-old guy so I can fight. Instead of a 63-year-old guy to fight. I mean, I got to be, I'm in pretty damn good shape, guys. I could beat a 63-year-old guy up. They said, no, we couldn't find anybody. And I said, well, is there any women under 13 that want to fight me?
Oh, my
God. And they couldn't find any women under 13, so I didn't fight anybody that night. But I gave a chance. I gave, you know, anybody over 63, any woman under 13, I'd fight them. But wasn't meant to be. Wasn't meant to be.
Well, I would have fought you, and I'm only 51, so.
Oh, well, do you have an uppercut, or, you know, I don't want to get hurt.
No, I would have just wrestled more than boxing.
Like,
wrestling would have been more my speed.
I've been doing the, you chase me around.
Well, you don't know that one fight you did win. It's only because that girl was drunk.
If you don't know, I have fought in 100 fights. I've lost 99 of them. The one win, which is to my credit, well, that person keeps demanding a rematch. But as Philip said, it's not my fault. She showed up drunk. So no rematch. I win.
Let's go to 818, Bill.
818, talk to us a little bit. What's on the air? What's on your mind tonight?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. I love that deep voice there.
This is President 5150 from Pirate Riders out here in Los Angeles.
I'm
doing good. I know you gave me a number of shows that I could call back before our event, but I had minor surgery, so I was down for a week. And just starting to get around to you know, being able to socialize and speak a little bit. I wanted to touch base on this important event because, obviously, with regards to anything that goes on with any event, the end of the day, it's all about the charity. And that's the reason I work so hard for it, because, and I'm sure at the age of some of the people that I've been listening to for the past 15 minutes, we all know somebody who has passed away from cancer or somebody who's going through it. Or somebody who's in remission. So our fight continues. And if you have just a couple of moments, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the event.
Good in the air, brother.
Sunday, October 14th, beginning at Glendale Harley-Davidson, we have a registration period from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., where all we do is ask you for 10 measly dollars that goes to charity. We have some Sons of Anarchy stars. We have a DJ at the dealership. We're going to have some fun there for a couple of hours, mingle and match, and scratch the back of the dealer by bringing people through their dealership for their generosity of letting us stomp all over their dealer and providing us with raffle prizes, gift cards, refreshments, and the such. And then we kick stands up at 11 o'clock for Los Angeles Harley in Anaheim. At their new location, we'll be there about 12 noon, where we'll pick up more registrants and bring a whole list of people with us on this ride from 12 noon until 2:30 in the afternoon. And we have two DJs at that location, one out in the parking lot and one upstairs on the third floor in the motor clothes department. And again, we'll have refreshments, a taco truck, you know, music, entertainment, and some more personalities from television, and another registration period to raise more funds, obviously, to continue the ride. And then we kick stands up at 2:30 with the Freedom All Ladies Ride. This is where we put the ladies wearing pink because of Breast Cancer Awareness Month at the front of the ride.
Uh-huh.
And we lead them to Magic Wheels Clubhouse of Los Angeles, which is a large tilt-up warehouse building. It's a magnificent clubhouse with a magnificent motorcycle club also co-presenting this event. And then we have a main event with a stage, yet another DJ. We have three comedians. some more personalities, three actors from the Sons of Anarchy, vendors, food trucks, a custom bike show.
From the Sun.
If you already purchased your wristband on the motorcycle ride at the dealerships, you can roll right into the clubhouse. If you didn't, we're selling more wristbands at $10 a head to get into the clubhouse if you're a ride-in that didn't catch the ride or you're a walk-in. And all bikers, all cultures, patch wearers, no patch wearers, people in cages, their family, friends are all welcome to come out, help us celebrate life and fight cancer to benefit, like I said, at the end of the day, the two charities that we're sponsoring, both nonprofit organizations supporting cancer patients while they're going through, obviously, chemotherapy and this terrible disease.
Didn't it start when you guys helped that one lady and then you were going to help her again and she said, well, let's do this for other people too?
Yes, you have a great memory. Granny, she's a female writer herself. She's up in her age, I believe, 60 years old. She rides a Harley with apes. And she can no longer ride her Harley currently because she has a reoccurring bout of cancer. She'll be at the event, so she'll have to be driven. But it all started 4 years ago when some friends of hers on the set, mostly female riders, got together just to pull some cash together and fill her refrigerator and pay some utility bills while she was going through her first bout of breast cancer.
Uh-huh.
And once she was in remission, she wanted this thing to go on, because while she was going through cancer, she was introduced and met these supporting organizations who will actually go to your home and pick you up and take you to your chemotherapy if your family members are taking care of their own family or unavailable. They'll fill your refrigerator with food, they'll pay your utility bills, and they'll stay with you at home until you're comfortable and you go to sleep. It's a support organization that she was passionate about, and when we met them, the decision was easy for us to follow suit and support that organization. So every year we support that organization, and then we rotate to another organization as our second benefactor. And this will be our fourth year of doing this, third legitimate year, supporting the 501c3 nonprofit cancer supporting groups.
Okay. I got a question on who from the Suns is going to be there.
We got Emilio Rivera, Marcus Alvarez, the president of the Mayans Motorcycle Club.
Right.
We have a reoccurring actress who's been on 22 episodes. Her name is Ima. She plays the porn star, who actually was in episode 2 of this year.
Right.
And we have Amin Joseph, who is a new cast member who's going to be a reoccurring actor. Because of the way the story is twisting.
Okay.
And then we have three comedians, and Matt Burke and Floyd Cicero from the Operation Repo Show, who both ride motorcycles. Emilio also rides a custom motorcycle, soft tail with apes. So they're actually going to be riding in the ride with us.
Cool.
And then we are hoping to get, this week we'll find out with schedule changes, Malcolm Jamal Warner, who has his own television show, Read Between the Lines, who used to be on the Cosby Show. He also rides his own custom Harley.
Mm-hmm.
So,
know all those guys very well.
Yes, so we're drawing some good attention to the event. You know, we advertise this event, you know, mostly in the Harley sector. We are motorcycle clubs, so we also, you know, we don't discriminate against clubs. We don't care which club you are, but we go further by going to the sport bike clubs, the vintage clubs, the bobber clubs. You know, what we've learned about this when we started with Granny is it was a breast cancer ride.
Mm-hmm.
The first year it was called Granny Breast Cancer Survivor Ride and Main Event. It was a long name, but a lot of the people that wanted to come on board as sponsors and supporters and volunteers were telling us stories about their uncle, their mother, their sister, and it wasn't about breast cancer anymore. It was about colon cancer, prostate cancer, liver cancer, skin cancer. So Granny and I got together with some of the committee members, and we had a discussion, which led to the name change I mean, in a nutshell, it is much bigger than us. And the more time we spend on the bench or saying that we're going to do something about it, the less people we have fighting this cause. And we need more people on the fighting side to help the people in support groups to make these people feel comfortable while they're going through these treatments. Because there's no way a small organization as ours, and I'm not saying that we're no amount is small, but such groups in the City of Hope, they're getting some large support from, you know, foundations and rich and famous people, you know, people like Bill Gates. Support groups are kind of not looking for a cure, but they're there on the same fighting team helping these patients while they're going through their treatments. And I can see the people that I know that have cancer, what they're going through, and sometimes some of the illness and the deteriorating state when you're going through chemotherapy. Other than that, I'm not a doctor or scientist, so I don't know much about it, but going through chemotherapy is such a poison to the human body that, you know, we have to find a cure, and we have to comfort these people who are people we know in our family, people that we, you know on the motorcycle community, our neighbors, our coworkers, or like for many people that might come to this event who don't know Granny, just an acquaintance that they're going to meet. She's a wonderful woman with a spirit that it goes beyond. Her strength and her spirit goes beyond most grown men that I've known, and she continues to fight. When she had this reoccurring bout of cancer, she had her pity party, and then she woke up and says it's time to get back up and fight, kind of like an injured player that wants to go back and help his team get to the goal, you know, to the end zone. And it's kind of like when a soldier comes home from a tour and he'd rather be back, you know, in Afghanistan with his troops than at home because he feels he's not supporting his you know, battalion. And that's her spirit right now, and we support that. So that's why we continue the work and continue the fight and continue the support.
I want to tell you that we have a friend of cancer. He's the cancer's taking the nose off his face. So he has a big piece of gauze and bandaged up there. And his sister has to drive him down to my bike shop now. Once a week, he stays for about an hour or so. That's his really only touch with the world out there. So he said to me, I want everybody to call me Fred No Nose. He said, I don't want to hide. I don't want anybody to think I'm ashamed of this. This is a disease. It's cancer. It's taking my nose off my face. So he comes in once a week, and he hangs out at the shop. And he gets a little strange looks, but you know what? He's telling everybody, you want to know what the problem is? It's cancer. That's how he's dealing with it. So I think people are willing to stand up and say, hey, I'm not ashamed of what it is. What can I do to defeat it? So what you guys are doing is extraordinary. We appreciate that.
Yeah, and I appreciate your ability to allow us on here to speak about it and reach the masses. I know some of your viewers, like a couple of weeks ago in Canada, he has since communicated me a couple of times and calls me brother, and I've never seen him from day one. And you know, that's how I am. I'm a writer. I've been writing for 39 years. I've been patched for about 10. And I spend a lot of my time around motorcycle events, shows, and charity events when I'm not riding a motorcycle.
I met you at a new magazine opening.
That is correct. And
the magazine was excellent.
Wrench Magazine.
Wrench Magazine.
It was South Bay Customs hosting the Wrench Magazine launch.
That's correct.
And that was, you know, I know I didn't spend a lot of time there, but, you know, that's what I like to do is go outside of, I don't know, the norm of where I usually sit to meet other bikers, other communities. And, you know, that guy, I guess, you know, I'm riding a Road Glide and I have a sport bike in the garage. But I like to meet these guys that are on bobbers and choppers, and I like to occasionally meet. I went down to Venice Beach a couple of weeks ago for the Venice Vintage Motorcycle Rally, and we did a historical recreation of a picture that was done in 1910. Well, we recreated that, and then we took a ride up to Pepperdine. And I don't remember how many flags were on the lawn at Pepperdine, but it was representative of 9/11, so there had to be 3,000 or 4,000 flags up there. from all the people we lost in the entire 911 event. And they all took a photo opportunity there and then came back and had their rally down in Venice Beach. And to see all of these motorcycles that you think don't even exist anymore, people are riding them, they're rebuilt, they're looking just like the day they came off, you know, the showroom floor in BMW or Honda or Ducati or Harley or wherever. I saw, you know, hundreds of these motorcycles, and, you know, it was just a treat to be in that other cultural realm of the motorcycle community. And, I do welcome everybody to come out to our...
Let me play one of Mike's one of his tracks. Stand by, hold on. This is called Spice. I mean, not very radio friendly by terrestrial standards. It's called Give a Fuck. It's called Big Mike P, ladies.
They got out of the car. They basically just sat in air conditioning, watched what was going on.
I just point out, Phil, that you went up there not to attend that program, but sit outside that and to protest and to let people know that they don't want colors in there, and a lot of you people are out there protesting the event in there. So you were not there as a participant. You were not going inside.
No.
You were at the gate. I want people to know that because, you know,
yeah, we had firemen clubs. We had all kinds of clubs out there.
Yeah. The funny thing was that they allowed us to hang our cuts from our easy ups right next to our motorcycle, but we couldn't wear them. And then, you know, the United States Marine Motorcycle Club came in, and they were able to wear their cuts. So it was difficult for us to approach the lieutenant who was running the show that day as far as security. But we had to because we were standing up for our rights, and we said, well, we're going to put our patches on. He says, no, you're not. And I said, well, these guys here have their patches
on. Right.
And he says, well, it doesn't say the word MC on it. And I brought at least 10 cuts from 10 different clubs that I had sponsored in these tents that day, and none of them said the word MC. Some of them were unified riding club patches. And I said, I think you guys are so undereducated or overblown or don't even know what you're talking about. You think you're educated because you use the word cut and you're not even a motorcycle rider because of some film that your department showed you and now you're trying to force it. So, you know, we decided not to be a part of that show anymore, and unfortunately it was boycotted by some pretty serious individuals up there, and his show basically fell apart. And I don't know what's going to happen with his show next year because he's pretty much put himself on the radar with his communication to, you know, the motorcycle patch world, regardless if it's one percenter clubs or if it's riding clubs or just everyday guys that are in bike collecting clubs or whatever who like to go to these shows. And I had bikes in the Easy Rider show, and I was walking around and saw, you know, I'm not going to name names, but I saw law club patches. I was wearing mine down there at the convention center a couple of years ago, and not one person told me to take my patch off.
No.
And they won't at Easy Rider. They'll let you.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's...
In Las Vegas, years ago it was bad, but this year at Vegas, a lot of clubs are all wearing full patches, even though they said can't do this. Some of the casinos were letting the people... check into the casinos wearing their patches. So this year, even though they said it was going to be terrible, they let their guards down.
No, I think last year seemed to be more strict with it than this year.
Last year was bad. There was a lot of trouble everywhere last year.
Yeah, last year was worse.
Beefs on Fremont Avenue. We had a lot of beefs going on everywhere, but I saw no beefs anywhere. I saw a lot of clubs that don't get along. Well, they'll recognize each other and nod and just go about their business.
That's like the two guys that stood behind me and you
whole night,
you know,
because we were holding court on the corner.
Well, my understanding, my understanding with what happened with the L.A. Ride for Kids was the, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't really get to go to the Love Ride, but there was something that we heard about, I don't know, something happened to a police officer, or I don't know if it was an accident or a killing, or I don't know what happened, but they said that it was something that happened at the L.A. Ride where a police officer got hurt, and that was why they didn't want to have anything to do with, like, a motorcycle.
Wasn't that the guy that got ran into, Bill, and knocked off his bike?
Yeah. The Love Ride, I got to tell you, I've had a lot of motorcycles, obviously. But in the course of all my events at the Love Ride, when they leave Glendale Harley and they go up to Lake Castaic, it's a 50-mile tour. When the first bikes arriving at Lake Castaic, there's still motorcycles leaving Glendale Harley-Davidson, excuse me. Twice in my career, I've had people, first of all, the pack, you know, is expanding back and forth, courting, if you will. I've had people run into my rear end, and luckily I had a Heritage-style fenders, full fenders in there, because they're looking up at the bridges where everybody was waving and paying attention to my ass, which is kind of important to pay attention to, folks. They're waving at everybody. Twice I've been rear-ended, neither time enough to hard enough to go down, but luckily each time I was hit, it was like center, right on the fender, and my fenders were damaged. Again, I'm not complaining about that, but the amount that people aren't paying attention to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I tell everybody, the passenger wave at the people. You pay attention to damn traffic in front of you.
Right.
Watch out for Bill Kennedy's ass, for God's sake.
Well, that's like,
you know, that's a fact. You hit it right on the nail, you guys. I mean, we are so concerned about our ride making a dirty mark on this entire event. We decided to take our ride down to about 50 miles per hour. We're going to speak to everybody before we leave, which isn't always the gift that Glendale Harley has, because they got people parked on six different streets and you can't reach everybody. But because we're going to be in a parking lot or the street in front of Glendale Harley with a DJ and a speaker system, you know, we're going to say, hey, you know, pay attention to the person in front of you 100% of the time. You look out for the person behind you. You know, we know that we've got beginners and novice and experts all mixed in together, people who may have not even been riding in packs. So we're going to go slow. We got the road captains, and we've got our margin of what's going on, and we have the protection. We don't want a sty in our eye with some type of an accident. And, you know, sometimes the police, everybody sees them motor cops because they're trained so well. They have to go through these rider academies at the police department that they know what they're doing. But the case in point was an officer's funeral in South Bay where two officers, I guess, collided with something else. I can't remember what it was. I think, and they died while the entire procession was going by to bury one of their brothers.
Oh, my gosh.
So, shortly after that, it was headline news. Shortly after that, we had our cancer ride, and we had to, you know, prep our road captains that, you know, sometimes we think we're badass riders and we know what we're doing. You know, boots, leathers, helmet, or what, but things could happen, and we need to take all of the extra precautions to minimize and maximize, to minimize the dangers and maximize the fun and the safety.
Right. It's almost like having to predict. That's how I feel when I'm riding. It's almost like you have to predict what that other person's going to do ahead of time.
It's just like, it's like when you're going to work on your bike and you're driving with 14,000 cagers on the 405 freeway.
Right.
Only you find they're all your brothers and sisters on twos, and not all of them know how to ride. Riding a motorcycle isn't for everybody, even though there's a lot of people trying to do it. So keep that in mind, and you will stay safer. Bill and Phil, get going.
We thank you for your time tonight. The message is important.
You're welcome to come back.
Please, yes, come back.
Yes.
We appreciate everybody's memory again.
Both of you.
I thank you, brothers, for your time and the questions and the allowance to publicize this on your radio show. It's a very important thing to us, and I'm very, very deeply grateful for everything that you do for us.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Phil and Bill, Freedom just walked in. The girl you met at the magazine lodge?
Right.
She just walked in. She's running our Freedom All Ladies Ride in the cancer event. She just wanted to say hi.
Hi. Oh, hi. Hey, how are we doing?
Good. Thank you so much for giving Rick this opportunity to, you know, talk about the Watch the Grass cancer and stuff like that. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate you saying a few words, because as often as we have so many men on the air, it still is nice for a woman to speak, because then other women can say, well, wait a minute, if she's going to be there, maybe I can show up too. This is not just about guys. It's not just about Harleys or Hondas or BMWs. We want women riders at your events, whatever they're doing. So every time he's speaking, if you can get in and say a few words too, encourage the women riders to show up. Help everything.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm a bona fide rider. I would love to do that. You know,
all
right. I've been riding for 6 years, so I'm all about women riders and, you know, just being women and riding hard and having a good time. So I would love to do that anytime.
When you have these big events, I tell women riders, you may not know anybody when you get there, but I guarantee you, just wait a little bit. People will walk up and talk to you. You may go anywhere else, but you will not leave a stranger. You'll have made friends, I guarantee you.
You know, one thing that I'm glad that I was able to start doing, and I didn't plan it, is when I first started riding, I go up to the riders. I feel like, you know, they're my family. We're sisters. I want to get to know them. So I always make a point to approach the women riders, and I've really gained some valuable friendships through the years with a lot of really fabulous, you know, biker chicks, as I call us.
I just wanted to repeat it because I want to make sure. Freedom is actually from L.A. Harley to Magic Wheels Clubhouse for the third year in a row. Actually, this will be the fourth year, representing the Freedom All Ladies Ride, which is a part of this cancer event. And we put all the women who ride motorcycles up front, or their men that ride them as passengers on the back wearing pink, and then all the guys have to go to the back for just that last leg. So because of the breast cancer aspect of this, because 87% of breast cancer afflicts women and only a small percentage men. So this is their opportunity as supporters of this event. And for the last couple of years, we had Granny riding up there on her motorcycle as well. So Freedom takes these women all the way to Magic Wheels through the street entry with pride, and we want all the women riders to come out, and if you can make it to Glendale, ride the full ride, or at least make it to L.A. Harley, come catch up with us. If you can't come to the main event and meet, last year we had 125 female bikers and passengers, so come meet your female bikers.
Right on.
Okay.
Well, I wish you much success, man. I hope you guys rock it this year and meet your goals and keep on working for the big picture.
And you guys, you both have a couple of more shows before your events.
Touch base with us. I'm going to go home and touch my dinner because I'm hungry now.
Okay. Bye, you guys.
All right. Good night.
All right. Thanks so much, Bill and Phil. You guys rock.
Thank you to everybody calling in tonight. Again, without you calling in, it's just Phil and Bill. So please, it's all of our show. I tell you that. All of us.
And I'm going to let a little actual Rudy Pell take us out.